Okay, today is February 2nd. Okay. We are up to the third part, which is Jewish commitment, and this is the reflections of the Rav. By the way, both reflections, the Rav 1 and the Rav 2, today we're starting, we're still in volume 1, but both reflections of the Rav, there are two volumes, are available at the Sfarim Center. They're very reasonably priced, very easy to read, easy footnoting, $15, maybe $30 for those together. Oh, thanks so much. Guys, I have 5 books at the Sfarim sale. Go look for them.
Yeah.
Do a, what do they call that?
Scavenger hunt.
Scavenger hunt, yeah. Okay. Okay.
You just said today's about
So Jewish leadership. This is on Roman numeral 3. So far we've done the first 2. Okay. The purpose of Jewish leadership is to... Well, it's to use, I guess. But give us, make it useful.
Wait, are we in leadership or something?
But the word chinuch means is to put something to use. That's why you have a chinuchus mizbeach, chinuchus habayis. So the leaders in Israel, from the top down, then you have a melech, right? You have the shofet, right? You have the kohen, right? You have the navi. Historically, amongst our people, we've moved. I'm not going in order of the historical nature, but the first act of Shaul HaMelech was to fight against the Plishtim, which is what they wanted. Right? They needed someone. They said, "You want someone to fight our wars." Just historically speaking, throughout Sefer Shoftim, as soon as the Shofet dies, the problem for which they needed the Shofet in the first place, right, resurfaces every time he dies. So you can understand, they would say, listen, we don't want this nonsense, this situation keeps repeating itself. We don't want to have this vacuum in leadership where we keep on repeating history. We want a king who will give his kingdom to his son, and there is a continuum. Okay? All right, I understand that. Why Shmuel pushed back from that? Maybe something personal. Because they asked him to get them their king. L'shoftein k'chol ha'goyim. Next pasuk says, "Vayera ve'ine Shmuel kasher sha'al ha'am tnolam melech l'shofteinu." Get it? Just that they said kichol agoyim. All right, the Torah uses that lashon, but that they said, "Give us a king l'shofteinu." I mean, what am I? He was the shofet. He's the last of the shoftim. What a chutzpah! After all, Shmuel did for them, get us a king to be you. Right? Okay. Anyway. That's the, by the way, who says this? Ramban al Torah, the Pasuk for Yusuf Shevet Behuda. Ramban al Torah says that what angered Shmuel, because they're trying to do a mitzvah. The Torah says it's a mitzvah to have a king. Right? All right, the Gemara says that Shmuel perceived that they wanted a king for the wrong reason. Okay, Shoftenu is the wrong reason, says the Ramban's student. Ron,
We've heard of Drushas Haran, also available at this farm sale. Also very reasonable, it's like $11-$12. Drushas Haran, thin blue book. Very worth having. Drusha number 11 tries to explain why Shmuel was angry. It's a very interesting point. The Melech and the Shofet are two different institutions in Israel. One is executive, one is judicial. Do not mix those two. Wanting a king to be your Shofet is giving that king too much power. Whenever a king does judgment, bad things happen. The king's job is to make sure that there's good justice, and sometimes he may weigh in, okay, in a minami. Judge, a king can't sit on the Sanhedrin for this reason.
Checks and balances.
Exactly, and those checks and balances are built into our system, says the Rambam. There's a shoftim v'shotrim titein lecha, and pesukim later it says shoftim v'melech ha'melech. Those are two different institutions. To say tnanam u'melech l'shofteinu k'chol ha'goyim is giving your king too much power. And that's what angered Shmuel, according to the Rambam. It's a little like his Rebbe, Ramban, that what angered him was l'shofteinu. Got it?
What were the two branches? Just say one is
judicial.
Shofet is judicial.
Shofet, and executive is the king. Now, I would say, I'm applying U.S. Constitution to this, but it's similar, right? If you would say who's responsible for the legislation, it's the Kohen. The Kohen is the teacher in Israel. Listen, before the Korban Beis HaMikdash, tell me some names of Shas characters. Before the Beis HaMikdash, second Beis HaMikdash destroyed. Name some.
Any character before the second.
Any character who lived before the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed.
Rabbi Shmuel.
No.
Does
it say Rabbi Shmuel was the Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol? That's not the Rabbi Shmuel you're talking about.
Let's see.
Rabbi Shmuel was Bar Kokhba, Rabbi Kiva lived 70 years later. But you're right, there was a Kohen Gadol named Yishmael at the time of the Korban, but he's not called Rabbi Yishmael, he's called Yishmael Kohen Gadol. Next.
Hillel.
Next.
Ali
Kohen Gadol. Okay, a little bit in the time of Shas, Shizrof lived at the time of Shas, you know, in Tanoim, obviously. Okay, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and Rabban Shimon Gamliel, the only two people called Rabban because they led before the Chorban and after the Chorban. Right? Before the Chorban, there's no Rabban. There's no one that's called Rabban. Shimon ben Shetach, Nitei Harbeili, Yossi ben Yoezer, the Zukos, the Draft Perkei Avos, right? Or in the Mishnah Chagiga. No one is called Rab. The Rabbanim or the Kohanim. Right? They're the teachers. Got it? So you see the three here? The Melech is the executive. The Shofet is the judicial. And the Kohen is the legislator. So far? Okay. This is what the Rav does with this. It's beautiful in the reflections. Okay, but you're going to read this. Let me tell you, you'll all get an A if you just read the readings. Make sure you read this. It's easy, it's English, it's on time, it's listed. Just read the readings. Okay? Introduce you to a book I have. I use it often in the GPADS class. I'm teaching Shmuel this semester. The book is called From Gods to God. The author is Avigdor Shinan, with whom I had the opportunity to learn with in Revel in the 70s. He's still alive. Just wrote this book. He wrote it in Hebrew. It's been translated, so it's available. Hebrew is difficult, but the translation is very good. Avigdor Shinan. He wrote it with a few other people that listed beneath it. He's the main author. And as you can imagine from the title, the purpose of the book is to show how Judaism differentiated itself and broke certain motifs and ancient assumptions about, let's say, idols, I'm using that metaphorically, that had to be smashed. That child sacrifice, what a king's rights are, etc., etc. Slavery. So not to be with idolatry, sexual permissiveness, all kinds of things like that. So to be sure is an important work to that you should at least be aware of. This book is called Toldot Emunat Israel. I don't think anyone here would ever have run into this directly. It's a 7-volume Hebrew book, not easy to manage. But you may be familiar with its author, Rav Yecheskel Kaufman. Yecheskel Kaufman, because he's quoted often by Nechama Leibowitz. I think Nechama Leibowitz you probably have run into. High school maybe or near Israel. Nechama Leibowitz studies on the Parsha, right? So she quotes him pretty often. Right? He's not traditional, meaning that he uses whatever I mean. Hopefully by now you know what I mean by that. But there has been, this book was written in the 40s. There's it's 50 years old, by a man named Moshe Greenberg. He was the head of the Bible department at Hebrew University in the 50s and 60s. He made a compendium of all these volumes called The Israelite Religion. Okay, I hope that some of this will, at least you'll be aware of these books. I'm sure that this book is probably at the Sfarim sale. I doubt if this is. This book may be at the Sfarim sale. I'm not sure. What these two books, Toldot Emunat Yisrael and this compendium of Moshe Greenberg, in English, this is in English. It's a paperback, about 400 pages. This is what it does. It compares the stories of Tanakh, the mitzvahs of the Torah, very quickly to over 100 ancient religions and deities. It's incredible, what it does. I teach a course in this. Obviously, we use other books. It goes pasuk by pasuk, the parshas mishpatim, comparing cuneiform law to Torah law. About courts and about damages and about family life and then the like. Right, if you have a yen to look at how the Torah, how different the Torah is from Sumerian, Babylonian, ancient Egyptian law and things like that, this is a quick address to go to. Okay. Here is what I'd like to show. There is no ancient culture where the Navi gets his way with the priests or the king or the king and the judge are usually the same in the ancient world. It's a uniquely Torah idea, at least the way the Ran presents it, Rosh Yudalev. Right, question number 11, that wants to make sure that we have a clear delineation between the executive and the judicial. The king may, like in our land, help to choose the judges, may even get one fired if he feels he's not doing a good job. You following? But it's not my job to take his place. Can you think of the first time when David plays judge? Yes.
His son? When his son went against him?
It relates to his son. But I think here you go, you're moving to
our head, yes. When Natan brings the analogy of the sheep.
Exactly what I was looking for, yes.
Very
well. When Natan gives him an analogy of a sheep, a rich man who took a sheep from a poor man. That the reader senses immediately is the rich man is David,
as many sheep as all his wives. The poor man is Uriah. The one lone sheep of the poor man is Bathsheba. Right? This guest, this halach, this wayfarer, this passerby comes to the rich man. The passerby is the Yetzirah. That always starts off as just a passerby. He didn't go looking for her bathing. He wasn't peeping into her. He was just walking on his patio, and maybe she was bathing, and the screen fell or something, and he should have said, "Whoa, I shouldn't be looking at that. Whoa, I'm going back." And instead, he let the Yetzirah stay in, and he became an Oreach. Right? When he tells him, a passerby came to the rich man, and the rich man did not want to give any of his own sheep to the guest who came. Instead, he slaughtered the one lone sheep of the poor man that loved the sheep so much in order to give to the Ish HaBa'ira. It's all one pasuk where this guest who comes is first called a Halach, then an Oreach, then an Ish, because that's how the Yetzirah works. It just passes by, and then all of a sudden it becomes, if you let it stay, it becomes a lot harder to push out. Right? You start gambling, you start drinking, whatever, you start the drugs. Every time you use it, it's going to be harder and harder to get off of that thing. Okay? Until it's an ish, and it's not just paying rent, it's in your head. Okay, so David's response to what to do with that man who stole the sheep?
Kill him!
And pay fourfold! Kimle mederabimine! You know Ksuvis Paragimel, right? He has him die and pay a fine, right?
Maybe you know the Gemara stuff, but you never do both. Right?
So David lost four children as a result. The baby that was produced by this liaison died. Tamar, Gemara says, committed suicide. Avshalom and Amnon.
Let
me
know that
is
because of this.
It's just the ironies of the Bible are always picked up by the rabbis. The quality of mercy is never strained.
Is that from? It's from popular culture that you guys don't know.
My last class didn't even know a song by Bob Dylan. What?
Turn. Kohelet chapter 3.
Okay, so. Okay, so that when you start mixing up these positions, our leaders get into trouble. Right. But here is an important thing. I want to say two things about Shaul. Okay. Shaul's very first act as king was to save the people of Yavesh Gilad. Do you know enough of Yavesh Gilad? Did I explain what that is? Okay, I'll explain. Okay, when Shaul became king, the nation of Ammon wanted to test him. Right? They went to a city that was pretty far from Ammon. Why he went to this city, maybe at this time I'll explain, but he went to a city called Yavesh Gilad, in what's now Ephraim and what's now Shomron. And he gave them a choice of terms for peace. Remember some kind of bodily mayhem? Anybody remember this? Show me that you studied Tanakh, please. He said, everybody has to remove their right eye. I want everyone in this city, we're going to come with soldiers, and if we see anyone with a right eye, we will kill all of you. So what do you do if you're threatened by this early part of Jewish history? What would you do? So, well, now we have a king. Right? But what would you do about 500 years before we had kings? What would you do if you're Yavesh Gilad and you're an Ephraim and you're being threatened by an outside nation? You would go to your Shofet. What was the problem with Shofet?
They were really... When one died, they weren't immediately replaced with someone else.
Yeah, weren't immediately replaced. But not only that, even when they did serve, there's not one of those 13 Shoftim that fought with all of Israel. All of Klal Yisrael. Not one. Not even Devorah, this week's Haftorah, who comes closest to uniting the nation. She complains in Shiras Devorah, in the Baritza Parashah of Beshalach. She complains in Haftorah Parashas Beshalach that all these tribes that I called upon to help, and they didn't help. Why were you sitting at home, Reuven, just sitting by your flocks when half of the nation is being threatened? Right? Not one Shofet fights with all the nations as one, all the tribes as one. Gideon almost goes to battle against Ephraim. Yiftach does go to battle against Ephraim and kills 42,000 people. At the end of Sefer Shoftim, almost an entire tribe is wiped out. The tribe of Binyamin. Right? Over an absurd story of it. When you remember it's called Peledish?
The
end of the story, he cuts up his Peledish into 12 pieces and sends a little piece. Imagine getting a piece of a woman in the mail, right? A box. Well, look, Daddy, look what came in the mail today. Right, so they sent to the leaders of all the 12 tribes this woman, right? And the rest of the tribes went to battle against Binyamin. They said, hand over the men who caused this to happen. And they said, we're not doing that. We're going to fight instead. And tens of thousands of Jews perished in this battle between Binyamin and the other tribes. Binyamin, they were really good soldiers, apparently. Right, so finally, after the third day, Binyamin was practically wiped out. Only 400 men remained. It's actually, it seems like 600, but there were 400 women that... anyway, let's say 400 couples were created out of this. 400 men remained, and the other tribes swore not to give our daughters up to Binyamin to marry. So, all right, then they regretted that. They said, there's a tribe that's about to die out. What are we going to do?
Well, one of them did, right? They gave the woman to...
So they gave...
And Shiloh did.
And Shiloh did. 400 women from a city called... Hey, Yavesh Gilad. Yavesh Gilad, it must be... The first king of Israel from Shef Binyamin must be descended from them. That's why Amon was testing Shaul. Are you the first king of Israel? Going to come and help people that from your own people? Are you going to come? You think you can unite your people? And Shaul tried. Shaul tried to get people to save the eyes of the whole town. And you know what? The Jews behaved just like they did in Sefer Shoftim. It's not my business. But the others still worry about this themselves. We're not coming. Get your people from Binyamin. Binyamin was a decimated tribe by this time. Get your people from Binyamin to help. We're not helping. You know what Shaul did? Oh God, come on guys. We're the people of the book. It's our book. What did Shaul do? He took an ox. He cut it into 12 pieces. You see the dichotomy here? You see the tikkun that's being made? We like tikkunim, right? There's a tikkun being made about cutting something into 12 to unite the people. He cut this ox into 12, sent one to each tribe, and said, this is what you're going to face. Your own cattle being sliced up if you don't come in great numbers. 360,000 Jews showed up to rout the Ammonites and to save the eyes and more of the people of Yabesh Gilad. You see how Shaul is making a tikkun for Sefer Shoftim and uniting the people at the same time. The next battle, Shmuel says, listen, you just had your first battle, very successful, wonderful, you wiped out the Ammonites, but now we have bigger fish to fry, Philistines. I'm coming back in exactly 1 week. Wait for me to prosecute the battle against the Philistines. And then we'll defeat them. I think that what happened next was done with Kavanah. Like Moshe, Shmuel was late. With me? Shmuel didn't show up. How late was he? I don't know. An hour late? 6 hours late? A day late? I don't know. But it says that the Philistines were advancing. Shaul wanted to fight the battle. And Shmuel had told him, would wait 1 week for me. We're going to bring korbanos together in front of the people, and then we're going to defeat those Philistines. So Shmuel's late. He's not showing up. So Shaul brought the korbanos himself. This is obviously at a time of what's known as heter bamos, right?
after Shiloh was destroyed in the time of Eli, you could bring korbanos any way you wanted in Israel. Right? So we're sort of forced into that position because the offering korbanos outside of the Ohel Moed is such a great avera that the 11 tribes were willing to go to war over that at the end of Sefer Yehoshua, right? And in Sefer Shmuel, every Monday and Thursday, and twice in between, someone's bringing a korban who's not even a kohen in his backyard. What's going with that? Heter bafos, fine. So Shaul brings the korban. Okay, you don't have to be a kohen, and you don't have to be in the Ohel Moed to bring the korban. Shaul brings the korban, and then Shmuel shows up, and he says, What's that? What's that? Right? Like he would say later, what's those sheep I hear? He goes, Shaul, what are you doing? He goes, well, you know, Shmuel, and you told me to wait 7 days. You're late. Look, you're 2 hours late. You're 6 hours, I don't know, it doesn't say hours east. You're late. And the people wanted to go and prosecute the battle, like you said. So I brought the korban. I thought that was the religious thing to do. I didn't want to fight the battle without bringing the korban. And Shmuel tells him the bad news right away. It's a little crazy. Gemara asks this question, second parak in Yuma. When it says that Shaul was a specimen of humanity in David, it says, how does David manage to survive what he did with Bathsheba? But Shaul doesn't survive not waiting the right amount of time for Shmuel. And Shmuel says, why didn't you wait for me? He goes, well, the people, he blames it a few times on the people. And Shmuel tells him, Nisculta lo shamarta es bar Hashem alokecha. Now your kingdom shall not survive. You may give up your kingdom to a son, but it will not survive. Certainly not in long perpetuity. According to Seder Olam, he was only king for 2 years, and his son Yishboshes ruled for 2 years. I'm not going to delve into that now. But so here is this is now what you're going to read in the Rav. It says reflections of the Rav. It says Rav 3. That's what you're going to be page 127 to 168. All right, and the. What you're going to read is why he feels that A, there's a need for separation. B, the top of the food chain in our leadership is the Navi. I put him at the bottom just so you could get the Rosh Tevos Mishkan. See, because the purpose of our leaders is to find a place for God in our people. Okay? Right? So the Navi, however, unlike everything else in the ancient Near East, the Navi can go to the king and say this parable, and the king can say, Chai Hashem ki ben moves ha'isha who says os. The man took that sheep, he shall die. U'ba'ar ha'seh yishalem arbatayim. Tachas Hashem o'chomal, he didn't have pity on that sheep. The two words that Nassan points to him and says, you the man. Sorry. In the ancient world, if a prophet dared go to his king and talk that way, first the king would break the finger and then feed him to the lions. You don't talk to me that way. It's true, the prophet did not come to accuse him. The prophet gave him that story so that the king could basically accuse himself and pass sentence on himself. You get it? But this is what the Rav's point is that in most societies, it's sort of, it goes, you know, highest, but by us, the Navi's the highest. The teacher is the highest. King who doesn't realize that he has to go to his kohen for advice. Now, it's true that Navi bows down to the king. When Nassan comes to see the king, he bows to him. The king is a ceremonial post, and it's important that everyone sees that he's so, you know, some to see Malach Melech Shetim and so Alecha. But at the same time, Rav makes his argument. For not only in our times, we don't have kings, you know, we don't have kings today, but bless you. But the Rav is arguing, even in the Torah setting,
and Sefer Shmuel is probably your best book to determine this. But it's really the same with you know, Eliyahu and Ahav. Eliyahu shows respect for Ahav, but Eliyahu has his way with Ahav. What other prophet has the chutzpah to talk to kings the way our prophets do?
Well, we see all over the place where you're supposed to have respect for Mao, like Moshe and Paro.
No doubt. But the challenge is, and this is what the Rav says about Shmuel, is that Shmuel, it's crucial. This small infraction of not waiting for me made it look to the people like when they asked for a king to guide us in battle, that you win your battles with king's might. No. You ate the rechet, the ale of us is not the Mashem Hashem of the king, which Shaul is replacing with each other. Right? You tell Goliath, you fight in the name of your armor, and I fight in the name of God. So this message, this first public display of the king, did a good job by gathering the people together and you did what a king is supposed to do. You united the people. But now you made it look to the people that we win our battles against the Philistines because that we have a king. No. We win our battles because I'm here with you. And fact is, I came late on purpose. I'm making this up now. I came late on purpose. I was testing you. And you failed. Not just because you started bringing the carbon without me. I could forgive you for that. But blaming it on the people again, it took you three times in the conversation with me before you took the blame yourself. Something he will replicate with Amalek. You know that story, right? Because that's a famous Haftorah. He kept blaming it on the people. God at least knows how to say Hakasi right away. Okay. Clear everybody? Right. So you have to be careful. The teacher, the Navi, or the Kohen, whoever it may be, has to be able to. I remind you again, the Rav's Chiddush is that by us, this is the more important leadership. Right? That the Navi has to be able to articulate. The Kohen has to be able to articulate the proper response to what he calls the common sense rebellion. Enjoy that. That might be your most enjoyable reading of everything that is assigned you until now. It's called the common sense rebellion, where he deals with Korach. Okay? Those are also the writings of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. He's very good on this topic that I'm going to close today's class with. Okay? Baron Lichtenstein was Rav Yoshe Ber Soloveitchik's son-in-law, right? You all familiar? Right? Rav's daughters are still alive, as is his son. His son Chaim is still alive.
So Rabbi Schwartz, what's the relationship of Rav Soloveitchik that we're talking about now to Rav Soloveitchik that teaches class here? Is he like a grandson or?
His brother's grandson.
Oh, okay.
The Rav has only one, Rav, that's the topic of this class, has only one male descendant, named Soloveitchik, his son. Son did not marry, and his two daughters, one is Tversky from Boston, and the other one is Rabbi Tversky here, is Rav's grandson, his daughter's son.
Oh.
Mayor Tversky is here now. And his other daughter is married to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, who's Gush. Okay, so Rav Aaron Lichtenstein has I can tell you from so many different writings, but we do have some readings here from the Rav's brother, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. Okay, who also taught here for a little while. And I'll just point to the following. When the Rosh says at the Haggadah, Ma ha'avodah hazos lochem, right? So what does that make? Where in that makes him a Rasha? So the Haggadah concentrates on Lochem. Right? Lochem below Lochem. He should have said, Mahavad Allah is one. By excluding himself, he's, you know, how that makes you a heretic. Alright. If you should see it, that's smoke in a cloud, I would say with Derech Hasidus, The word atzmo is a euphemism for God in the Talmud. Whenever the Talmud doesn't want to say the word God for whatever reason. Titus thought he killed... I couldn't say the words. So I'll say Titus thought he killed himself. The choshav shaharagat atzmo. These are euphemisms. We don't want to say curse. Oh, I can't say the word. So instead I say we bless God. Right? Curse and bless God. Stone him to death. Birchas Hashem is one of the seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach. It's called a euphemism. So a euphemism for God sometimes in the Talmud is atzmo. Again, he took God out of this equation. How do we know that? Because in the Chacham's question, he says, "Ma ha'edos v'chukim mishpatim ha'shetzivah Hashem Elokeinu." Rabbi, he says it's Chen. All right, but there are terutzim for that. But he doesn't mention God in his question. I don't think God gave us this. A man made this up, and I think we should change it. But I agree with you that we should protect oppressed people. But we're not slaves anymore. But I'll tell you who are slaves. Right? Here's Rabbani's clore. Okay, and I'll connect this to the common center belly. He says, Maha avadah hazos lachem. Why are we commemorating an event that took place 3,000 years ago with 2,000-year-old rituals? We're living in modern times. Let's commemorate events that took place 100 years ago, 50 years ago, 200 years ago, with more modern images. Put an orange on that plate. Put a lemon there. Let's make it a little more colorful. You with me? Staying with me? Okay. Let's see what we can get out of here. Some more meaningful interpretations of oppression. Do we have to be so parochial? You get it? Maha avadah hazos lachem. I think that it's, and also perhaps the word avota is instructive. Yerushalmi says maha tircha. He calls it edos chukim mishpatim, he calls it avota. What's all this work? It's just work. Look, the pshat, there's nothing wrong with calling the Korban Pesach avota. The Torah calls it avota. Yah avadah hazos lachem imotam yimimimimimim. Rambam calls that the section of Kabbalah is called the Sefer Avoda. Nothing wrong with that. Right? Okay, get back to here. So Rav Lichtenstein, ripped apart the Rosh's few words to explain that I think that, I can go along with you. This is an important thing to do. But I don't like the way you're doing it. This is Korach's common sense rebellion. He says... He asks Moshe. I'm moving into a drash now. He says. He asks Moshe. Why is there a blue thread in the tzitzit? Now, the fact that Chazal made Korach's revolt hinge around tzitzis. Can you tell me a midrashic reason for this connection? Tzitzis is the very last mitzvah right before Korach's revolt. You get it? So Korach asks about the tzitzis. What's this blue thing for? Moshe says, well, listen, I asked God that myself. And God told me that the blue fringe reminds us of where the sky meets the horizon and the sea, and it reminds us of God's heavenly throne, and in Parshas Mishpatim, God's throne is Livnat HaSapir, like a sapphire. Hezekiel refers to the God's throne as with the color of sapphire. So, okay, so the blueness reminds us of God's majesty. And Korach says, I like that. It's a good idea. But what if the garment itself is blue? That's very close to Tchelis. Who would need to put on Tchelis? The whole garment is blue. I get one fringe on a blue garment. And Moshe says, Korach, your question makes common sense. But God told me it's the fringe that matters. Gotta have the tzitzis. But that doesn't make sense. Why do we need the tzitzis if the whole thing is blue? Right? And Moshe says, Korach, what can I tell you? So Korach, who was always waiting for the right moment to rebel against Moshe, this was just the right moment because they were just told that you're going to spend 40 years in the desert. Right? He hasn't brought us to a land flowing from milk and honey. He took us from a land flowing with milk and honey. Because what has he done for you? Vote for me, I'll set you free.
What's that from? Temptation, full of confusion.
I'll take you to him. Don't you just follow me?
I'll take you. He doesn't leave. So this is the comments that Trevelyan and Korach have waited for. And he starts with a whole series of questions. This is one. Okay. Moshe comes down very hard on Korach. He knows what's going to happen if they bring the Torahs. Come on, anyone who's here, you know, the Benavi was not too many months ago. He knows what's going to happen to them, but he sets them up. He says, you sure you want to do this, Korach? You sure you want to go through this? Right? You've seen what God can do. It's not about God. I love God as much as you do. It's about you, Moshe. You haven't done anything for us. So, okay. So, here is what the Rav said. Because remember, the Rav is writing this. The first reflections came out in the 50s. And he's writing this as, I've told you, Reform and Conservative are making great inroads amongst the Jews in America. The Rav was like, if you know your history, like Shimshon Raphael Hirsch in Germany in the 1850s, 1840s. You know enough about that? Okay. And the Rav had to, you know, to show, you know what the Reform and Conservative are doing today is what Korach did. Korach believes that it's good, it's important to have the emotions behind whatever this blue fringe does for you. But it's got to make sense. Right? It doesn't make sense. Remember the other question he asked? Why do you need a mezuzah in the room? So that you have God coming in with you, going out with you. Well, would you need it if you have a Torah in the room? If you have a Chumash in the room? Moshe said, yeah, you still need a mezuzah, even if the room is filled with Chumash. But that doesn't make sense. One little parsha when I have the whole Torah in the room? Moshe said, listen, this is what God told me. I got to go with the program. And he kept on piling on questions. And he said, this doesn't make sense. This doesn't make sense. And the people sided with Korach. Korach made sense because people like to make sense. But alas, this is the Rav. This is beautiful. Rav says that, you know what? If everybody gets to have their own input as to what the mitzvah means to you, right? The emotion creating the mitzvah. Korach says, I agree, we should all feel the majesty of God's kingdom. The blueness of the fringe, of the blueness of the crashing waves and the blue. So everyone gets to do it themselves. By the way, the Rav really didn't have to fight against Karaism. That was more for Sadigon and Ibn Ezra. But that's really Karaism. You know enough about the Karaites, right? A piece of Baraisa Shapir about Altishanu Aldati. Just get your own. You have your own independent autonomy. So learn how to get close to God through this mitzvah. In some way, that's an important thing to do in Hasidus. But to say, therefore, I can create the mitzvah, so that for me, tzitzis is a blue handkerchief in my pocket. I could look at it every moment. Right? Why not just a sapphire ring? How about that? Get the actual sapphire. Paint the wall blue. Wear only blue suits. How about just do the best thing? Make a picture of the crashing sea against the blue sky that the Gemara mentions in Menachos. Paint a picture of Yechezkel, chapter 1, of the blue bricks. Everyone on their own way. Right? So imagine Korach's great-grandson looking at a picture of the blue waves against the sky. And he's asking his grandfather, what is that? Why do we have that picture? And the man says, you know, my father, Korach, once told me what that was, but I forgot. I don't know what it is. So he doesn't have his tzitzis. Certainly wearing tzitzis, not wearing the actual fringes. Korach wasn't wearing that. It's easier to just get a blue hanky in your pocket. And not only that, they don't have the sentiment behind it either. They forgot that. They forgot that actions shape character.
famous Sefer HaChinuch. Okay, I'm going to take two questions and then we'll let you go.
Yes. Well,
you first.
Wouldn't you say that even if they were wearing the Chelus Tzitzis, they would look at the Tzitzis, Chelus, and say, why? What's the blue for? He said, I don't know.
Look, we should suffuse mitzvahs with meaning. In the writings of the era of Arizal, Korach is going to be our first Kohen Gadol when Mashiach comes, which is absurd, of course, but you have to know the writings of the Arizal. It's a good thing to want to give meaning to your mitzvahs. It's a good thing. It's something the Kohen Gadol should be involved in. But there's a reason why we have two leaders, a religious leader, Moshe, and a spiritual leader, Kohen Gadol. The spiritual leader's job is to make you feel good about your mitzvahs, and to make you emotionally connected to the shalulah you're about to shake, and the tzitzis you're about to wrap yourself into, and the kisufah you're walking into, and that's good. Chassidus is good at that. But there was also the mathematical aspect of making sure that my shiur is right. And to do only one without the other is missing something. Right? Which one should be the one that directs the other one? Look, the Rav was a brisker, so he says that, you know, there's a reason why perhaps the most emotional mitzvah of the year is pushed aside because of one witless dolt who's going to carry a shofar to shul on Shabbos. Right? We have Erevin in all the cities now. Still, we don't blow shofar on Shabbos. Because of one possible small violation of Shabbos, no one's hearing shofar this year on the first day of Rosh Hashanah. Because it's the mitzvah that counts.
Wait, that's coming up. Yale is going to be on
Shabbos. I don't know whether
that is. I think it is.
It's coming. Okay, whatever it is. But there are some bati dinim in Me'er Sharim that do blow on Shabbos. But I'm just saying is that this is what's going on. Okay, please read section 3. We're going to have new questions next time.
Wait, let's give me section 2.
Section 2 we did last time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, we're moving on.
Wow. We're going